Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Some of the issues we'll be discussing today, it is Wednesday, July 24th, 2013. We're going to talk a little bit about Iran today, and we're going to be talking a little bit, what about Bitcoin? Perhaps we'll bring that into our conversations today, and we're also going to be discussing the two Americans added to food stamp roles for every job that the administration says that it created. But first, we're going to get to the market report, so make sure you stay tuned. Gold today didn't have as nice a day today as yesterday, down $27 today. Spot was last quoted at $1,321.70. Silver was down 32 today at 20.26. Platinum was down $2 at $14.51, and of course, palladium was up $4 at $750. You had the USDX today, a little stronger today. It was higher today. Let me see where those numbers are hiding from me. You have the USDX today up 0.29 at 82.30, so wasn't that big of a day, but the big number move was crude oil was down 2.08 at 105.15. On the markets today, you have, let me get to the screen. Somewhere on here, Al, is my market report. It always hides from me.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, Melody.
It's hiding. Playing hide and seek. Mm-hmm. Here we go, folks. You have the Dow. Didn't follow much of the markets today, the paper markets. We've been here writing orders today. Dow was down 25 points at 15,542. The NASDAQ was up. It was just basically flat, 0.33 at 35.79, along with the S&P down 6 at 16.85. You have the 10-year yield, though. That's moving up almost 2.60 at 2.59. Folks, if you have any questions for the program today, make sure you email us at questions@dgscoins.com, questions@dgscoins.com. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I hear a fan.
Oh, I got the fan on. You're right. Let me...
Here, I will turn it off.
Well, you could have waited until the break.
Yeah, I meant to turn that off before the program began, but...
See, you always need me to remind you, don't you?
I don't know about always, but once in a while.
Did you hear about the Texas man accused of doing a Ponzi scheme in this Bitcoin? They were promising a 7% weekly return. And folks, again, if you ever hear 7% guarantee, promise, walk away.
Per week.
A weekly return.
You can get that if you're a mafia loan shark. But generally speaking, if it's a legitimate investment, 7% a week is hard to do. You got to be a banker or a mafia loan shark to get that kind of return.
Well, this guy's name, Trendon T. Shavers from McKinney in Texas.
Yeah.
The founder and operator of Bitcoin Savings and Trust. Allegedly raised a total of 700,000 Bitcoins in 2011 and 2012. Then worth about $4.5 million for his scheme, claiming that he made his profits on markets. He would use handles online such as Pirate, other things. But he had claimed that he has yet to come close to taking a loss on any deal and that the risk is almost zero when challenged. I mean, folks, I mean, how can you be so naive to think when anybody states these things that it isn't a scam? I don't get it. I don't understand it. He also said that he couldn't reveal his investment strategy. And I've heard these comments before. If I told you, then I couldn't do what I do. Just leave it to me.
Sounds a lot like Bernie Madoff, doesn't it?
Yeah, sounds a lot like Bernie Madoff.
They may be able to compare notes here in the foreseeable future. I don't know if they can put a Texan in a New York jail, but who knows? He and Bernie may at least correspond by mail.
And it's also Pat Kiley that everyone is real familiar with. If they listen to Shortwave, he was not the only one, but one of the several scammers on Shortwave Radio. And he was doing a Forex trading and had their own Ponzi scheme going. But you know what's interesting about this whole article, Al? It attracted suspicion among users of Bitcoin. And they were still prepared to take the risk, given the low cost of the virtual currency at the time, that it might pay off.
I understand that.
I mean, it's just kind of like, well, I know there's a possibility that this is a Ponzi scheme, kind of like Wall Street. I kind of know it's a Ponzi scheme, but you know what? I'm going to keep my money there anyway, and maybe I'll get lucky. It just defies reality.
I understand that, but I observed this in the 1990s. I can't remember all of the names because this is most of 20 years ago now. But there was a man in prison who claimed to have access to, my recollection, $1 billion. And he was going to donate that $1 billion to people in the legal reform community so they could open their own banks. And all he had to do was send him $1,000 to charter their own banks, you understand. And there were people that I knew, and I mean people who are reasonably intelligent and you'd think hardworking and the rest of it, that were sending $1,000 for a permit to open their own banks, and they're making plans, are they going to have their own bodyguards and buy new cars and the rest of this sort of thing. And I looked at it and I said, look, this doesn't make good sense to me. And over time, the $1 billion was supposed to come, then it didn't come, supposed to come, didn't come, went on for a while. People began to lose faith in this scheme. And then the guy claimed, no, I don't have $1 billion. I have $16 billion. Okay? And everybody was right back on board saying, oh, he's got $16 billion. You can't, I'm going to send my $1,000 to a guy who's in prison. You understand? You can't put a man in prison who has $1 billion. I don't care what you do. If I had $1 billion, I can do anything I want, and you can't get me into prison. I can hire enough attorneys. I can bribe the judges. I can bribe the jurors. I can bribe the prosecutor. I can do that's enough money. It's You can't jail a billionaire. And yet here's a guy in prison who claims to have $1 billion. And finally, people lose faith in the billion. And when he says he's got 16 billion, he says, oh, yeah, okay, I'll believe 16 billion. It was just crazy. There is something about human nature that is dangerous in its stupidity when it comes to greed. Somebody offers a free lunch, and boy, I'll tell you, we are all there, or virtually all of us are there, and generally to our great detriment. People have to learn to be content with what they can earn. It's this search for unearned wealth that puts us in some very dangerous and difficult positions. And you know, it's just part of human nature. I can't explain it, but I guarantee it's there. So it's not far removed from your notion about bitcoins.
I guess we're just a nation of true gamblers. We like to gamble. We like to take the risk. Our lives are not exciting enough, so we got to create some sort of excitement. And maybe we can turn that dollar into $1 million.
It might have been Jim Sinclair. He had an article in the last week or so. Maybe it was him, maybe it was another author. I don't remember clearly. But he made the point that the average person is now so impoverished that they're living hand to mouth. They got to have money for next week. They got to have money for next month. They can't take a long-term view. And he says, these people are competing with bankers who are anticipating what's going to happen perhaps a century from now in support of them, not just themselves, but their children and even their grandchildren. And he's pointing out these people take a much longer view. And because of that, they can afford to invest in things that they know might not make money by next Tuesday, but they will make money within 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. They take that longer view, and it gives them an enormous advantage. And it guarantees that they will get richer, while the rest of us who are concerned about, oh my gosh, I'm going to invest now so I can make more money next week. People with that short-term mentality are absolutely doomed to poverty. They won't easily escape unless they are brilliant. Well, at least extraordinarily sensible, uncommonly sensible. You got to have that long-term view. And the difficult part is, as we become more and more impoverished by government moving our jobs out of the country and raising our taxes until we can barely support ourselves, we can't take a long-term view. It's the sort of thing that's only affordable to people who have great wealth or incredible sense and discipline. You can take a long-term view, you can prosper. If you can't, you are going to be caught with the herd.
But you know, Al, that exactly that long-term view that has been a very important part of the destruction of this country and the coming together of a global economy. Because how long have we been doing this? People have been doing it even longer. I hear every day, I can't believe that these people have planned for centuries.
I know they do. They're not
planning. They've planned for centuries.
I understand that.
And they have patience, and they push it on to their heirs.
Yep.
They educate. That's why you have these schools, the certain schools that they go to. It's all about the conditioning and grooming these people to carry out the century-old desire to rule the world and coming together. And
the point is, the only way you're going to be able to effectively slow these people down or resist them is that you must also learn to take a long-term view. If you're going to be caught in a short-term investment strategy, a short-term earning strategy, it's like these people, okay, let's invest in bitcoins. Let's throw $1,000 at some guy in prison who's got claims to have $1 billion, for God's sake. It's crazy. But it goes to the short-term mentality rather than the long-term. You want to survive and prosper, you have to take a longer view.
You have to take care of yourself. There isn't anybody that can do it any better than you. I talk to a lot of folks about the negative points of the Forex trading when they were doing it, and it turned out to be the Ponzi scheme. But people went ahead and did it. Can you only imagine where they would be if they would have, if they took those funds and placed it in gold and silver?
I understand that.
They'd be far off better today. Might not have been as exciting at the point in time. And I recently received
might not have been as nerve-wracking either.
And you
how
might
many
not
people
have
went into panics when they lost their money in the Forex?
In fact, I have one client and listener to the program who just recently sent me a letter he received from an attorney that they're requesting that he repay. They're not requesting, they're demanding that he repays the profit that he did make prior to the collapse of that Ponzi scheme. And now he's stuck. He's either going to have to pay it back because the money he made was not from legitimate funds. He either has to pay it back. He's going to have to go get a loan or whatever to pay back this money, or they'll take him to court. And he doesn't have the money to fight the, you know, all these attorneys and courts and so forth from a different state, because you have to go to their state. So, and if all these people took away all the promises, all the glory, all the stars, all the glitz, and just bought gold and silver, took physical delivery of it, they'd be far better off.
I agree, but I'll tell you one thing. You get into some people who find themselves caught in a difficult situation, and we all are to some extent. I don't care how much wealth you have, you are caught in a nation that now is on the verge of some sort of serious economic difficulty, perhaps an economic collapse. Whatever happens, nobody's going to get through this unscathed. Some of us will do better than others, but the fact is we will all be at minimum inconvenienced and maybe hurt. What's my point? My point is it's not just a matter of blaming other people. You have to accept personal responsibility for your own situation. And you can't con an honest man. Half the people, that maybe more than half the people, maybe 90% of the people who are going to wind up taking it in the neck before this is all over are going to get that chop to the back of their head precisely because they thought they were clever, they thought they could get into some sort of a scheme, and I don't care if it's just a government retirement program, where they would get something for nothing. The rest of the saps would work, and they'd retire late in life, and the people in government could retire in some instances after 20 years and get twice as much as you'd ever get out of Social Security or whatever. There is an element, you can't con an honest man. If you're looking for an unearned dollar, you're probably going to come to a bad end. Doesn't happen to everyone, but if you do, you know, you got to say, well, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have been so greedy. The recommendation from my perspective, get a job, earn money, live within your means, do not borrow. You know, spend less than you earn, take the savings and put it into something like gold. It won't be instantly, it won't create the instant illusion that you are a wealthy person. You won't get the new Ferrari and the new McMansion and the rest of that right now if you're putting your money into gold. But instead of manufacturing that illusion, you put your money into the gold, you save the gold, you save the silver, and 5, 10, 20 years from now, all of a sudden, you are legitimately wealthy, and not by virtue of trying to con people or hustle people, but simply by being sensible, persistent, you know, hardworking, and honest. Can be done. And maybe it's the only way it can really be done for the vast majority of people. I know there's a bunch of crooks that can get fabulously wealthy, but you know, I think for most people, if you want to be a hustler, you want to be a con artist, you're going to wind up like a drug dealer.
And you know what, Al? It's very difficult to resist these people. I mean, they're professionals. They're professional con people. And they're not all, but they're very difficult to resist. They have the great pitch. And, you know, they have you eating out. They can sell the old ice to the Eskimo. They have you eating out.
It depends on the Eskimo. If the Eskimo is foolish and the Eskimo is weak, and if the Eskimo is looking for something for nothing, then we can sell to the Eskimo. We can sell ice to the Eskimo. But if the Eskimo is fairly strong, if he knows there's plenty of ice out here, if you're willing to go out there and exert a little energy to hack it out of the, you know, to hack holes in what passes for ground up there. It's plenty of ice. You don't need to buy any more. You can take care of yourself.
And you know what? Murray wrote in, he says, people fall for these things because they're desperate.
True.
Not all, though. I've known millionaires who fall for it, who put a large sums of money in these scams, and they lose it. So they're not all desperate. They're out of work with no prospects, and the bills are coming due. That's a large majority of them. They are seeking. Those are the ones that get hurt the most, because the guy who puts in $1 million, he does have the ability to have his attorneys and take them to court and make the biggest squeak, you know, so he gets oiled first. But a lot of these con guys go after those that are desperate because they don't have the means, they don't have the access to come after them, so they can take their Ponzi scheme longer and further down the road. And so when you're up against the wall, folks will do anything for a buck. Thank you, Murray.
All right, let's break and take a couple commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We were talking about how desperate the folks are around this country. There was numbers released on Monday from the White House Press Secretary Jay Carney, and he said since they've been the Obama administration created 7.2 million private sector jobs. And, you know, of course, they were bragging about that. But Since February 2009, the first full month of Obama's presidency, 9.5 million Americans have dropped out of the labor force. Nearly 90 million Americans are not working today. That means 1.3 Americans have dropped out of the labor force for every one job that the administration claims to have created. There are 15 million more Americans on food stamps today than when Obama assumed office. And at the end of January of 2009, there were 32 million Americans, over 32 million Americans, received aid from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And as of April 2013, there were over 47 million Americans on food stamps. And that means that more than two Americans have been added to the food stamp rolls for every one job the administration says it has created. That's your recovery.
Yeah, it won't be long if that keeps up. It won't be long before there's one person working and feeding two people across the country, two besides himself. And if you are one of the people who is perhaps fortunate enough to be on welfare, might seem pretty cool to have that one guy work as your slave. Get over there, Roscoe, and let's grow some more groceries. I'm getting hungry. But if you are the one guy who's working to support the other two on welfare and or food stamps, it may not be an ideal circumstance. And it can't go that far. Everyone understands it. But it's just more of the crap. Where do we get any straight answers on government? You almost have to wonder. They put these numbers out. How can they be? Do they really think we are so stupid that we won't figure out? They say, hooray, we created 7 million new jobs. Yeah, well, hooray, you created what? 10 million people on food stamps, an extra 10 million on food stamps. What the heck? Don't they think we're going to figure this out? And the answer is apparently not. They don't think we're smart enough to figure it out. And in many instances, they're probably right, but it is offensive. You know, I wish we could just deal with the truth on a regular basis, and it would certainly make solutions to our problems a lot easier. What else do we have, Melody?
Well, here's something that is always hard to find truth. Iran.
Yeah.
Netanyahu, Iran is weeks away from crossing red line.
Yep, there's the headline.
Yeah.
Prime Minister tells CBS Iran won't be allowed to cross uranium threshold, though warns that Iran is closer than ever. This was actually a week ago. Prime Minister, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu launched a rhetorical offensive against Iran last Sunday. The move came amid unease that the world might be enticed by a compromise proposal that believes that Jerusalem believes Tehran is hatching and concerns that regional turmoil was and concerned that regional turmoil was distracting everyone's attention from Iran's nuclear march. Now, here we go again, and we are hearing from Netanyahu that, oh my gosh, Iran is getting closer than ever. And all I'm saying is, OMG, if the crazy Iranians ever get nuclear weapons, they might use them to launch a preemptive attack on their enemies. Of course, the U.S. and Israel have also launched preemptive attacks on Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, Libya. But that's different. When the U.S. and Israeli do it, preemptive attacks are good. If Iran did it, it would be bad. But here's the point behind this. Netanyahu told an American audience on Face the Nation that regarding the 20% enriched uranium, the Islamic Republic was just 60 kilograms short of crossing his red line. OMG, Melody, OMG! Iran is closer and closer, inch by inch, approaching Netanyahu's dreaded red line. But it wouldn't be the first time, would it? In fact, I was sitting around trying to recall how long we've been listening to stories about Iran being just about to produce enough enriched uranium to produce a nuclear weapon. So I searched Google for stories, and I found the following dated 2008. That's 5 years ago. On June 6, 2008, the National Terror Alert Response Center, That's here in the United States. And they warned that Iran could have nuclear weapons in 6 months. Right? 5 years ago. And they still don't have it. I'm not saying that it's a good thing that Iran should acquire nuclear weapons. I'm not saying it's an insignificant thing. But what I am saying is that we have had 5 years of warnings that at any moment Iran is going to have nuclear weapons and then the whole world is going to be blown up. At minimum, someone should be telling us the truth. If you keep telling us that Iran at any moment is going to cross the dreaded red line and they're going to do something and have something or whatever, you can't do that for 5 years without diminishing your own credibility. If the UN says Iran's going to have nuclear power in the next little while, if Israel says it, if the U.S. says it, you can run these stories for 6 months, I get that. But how do you run them for 5 years? Don't you finally get to the, you know, the little boy who cried wolf? Don't we get to that scenario where people say, oh, enough of this crap about Iran, for God's sake. You know, Iran hasn't invaded another country in a couple of centuries. Iran has no significant history of initiating war or invading other countries. And yet we're all rattled to supposedly about Iran. What is the real motive behind this? What does Israel really have to fear or concern itself with when we talk about Iran? Do you have any idea, Melody?
Well, usually it's always some sort of a commodity, some sort of interest that they all want. And we all know Iran's oil and what they control and how they control it and how they sell it. So
how they sell it is an important.
How they sell it, exactly.
Meaning, do they sell it for only dollars, like good little Arabs? That's what you're supposed to do. You just sell your oil for dollars. That's what worked up until Saddam Hussein said, to heck with that, I'll sell my oil for euros. And so we invaded Iraq and killed Saddam Hussein. Left Iraq in ruins, but they're selling their oil for dollars now, at least for now. So,
yes, and all that, all the oil that we were to receive from Iraq, I believe that the large majority of that oil is going to China. So that oil really hasn't helped to pay for the war. That war was all off budget. And so, again, now it's just, where's the truth? Where's the beef? Where's the truth?
It's out there. It's out there if people want to look for it. But it's, you have to become the kind of person who is not easily persuaded by the promise of a free lunch or unearned income. You've got to be able to sit back and be content with your life now. You know, there's so many people, again, they got to have the big car now. They got to have the big house now. Why? So they can impress their neighbors and friends that they're a success, that they have done well in life, even if it's not true. And that's a formula for disaster. Sooner or later, you're going to lose the big house. You're going to lose the new car. Then what? You're going to look dumber than you would have looked if you didn't have it in the first place. Somewhere along the line, it's not just a question of demanding that the government be more honest. We have to become more honest. We have to be prepared to say, look, I'm only making X number of dollars. I'm not a rich man, but I'm getting by. I'm doing okay. You understand? I am, you know, I'm worthy of a certain amount of respect because I have a certain amount of honesty and integrity, and I'm getting by. And that has to be enough. For now, if you want more in the future, save. Invest wisely.
Why isn't that enough anymore, Al? Is it just
I don't know. We're just insecure. We people tend to be insecure, and we want to be able to impress our friends and neighbors and people we don't even know. And it has something to do with a great insecurity. Not just afraid of what other people think of us, but what will we think of ourselves? You know, as long as you're making it and you got a lot of money coming in the door and everything, well, you can look at yourself and say, ha-ha, I am a success. Well, maybe yes and maybe no. You know, we need, I've talked about this a number of times on the program, touched on the idea that we have been, our mindset, our context for reality has become an economy rather than a nation. in a nation, we have a system of values that's fundamentally based on right and wrong. In an economy, we have a system of values that's based on profit and loss. It's all about the money. There's money in the nation, too. I know that. You can't draw absolute lines, but this is a question of emphasis. And when you get into that economy and you try to think only in terms of profit and loss, anything that makes money, including prostitution and drug dealing, becomes acceptable. Why not? You know, if you can make money, and there's too many people who think like that, and they are going to come to a difficult point in life. We are going to come to a difficult point in life because they're here. They're right here. They're among us. They're in our neighborhoods, and they're going to be the first ones to get hungry if things go south. They're going to come knocking on the door, beating on your door, looking to see if they can borrow a cup of sugar or maybe a couple hundred pounds of dehydrated food. You know, we talked yesterday. I had Michael Snyder was on the program yesterday. We got into it a little bit, just pointing out he agrees that the fundamental problem in economics is not just mathematical. The solution to our economic problems is not going to be adjusting the interest rate or the inflation rate. It's not going to be done by tweaking the unemployment rate. Economics ultimately is a reflection of our national morality. And if we don't have a solid moral foundation for the nation, I guarantee we're not going to have a solid moral foundation for the economy. The whole thing is going to get shaky, it's going to become corrupt, and eventually it's going to self-destruct to all of our dismay. It's going to be bad for everybody. You want to avoid the coming economic problems? What's the first order of business? Become a moral person yourself. And that's easy to say, but it's very difficult to do. You know, I can sit back here and pontificate, but the truth of the matter is the temptations of immorality are so great that, you know, they're hard to resist. And especially if you're impoverished, if your income, you're just barely getting by, very difficult to be opportunistic and just take advantage of anything you see. Grab it, steal it, get it for yourself. So then you can hold on to your McMansion for one more month.
Yeah. Well, it all comes back to accountability and responsibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, what happens to you when you do these, these immoral things? Nothing. It's accepted. You're expected to do these things.
But there's one problem that does happen. And when you're expected to do immoral things, so are the people that you associate with.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, they're going to do something immoral to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not just a situation where, you know, I can succumb to temptation to do bad things. Insofar as that's part of my society, it's also true that the people around me, they're just as susceptible to that temptation as I am, if not more so. And next thing you know, I'm being robbed. I may sit here and think, oh, I'm pretty clever because I got over on somebody. I hustled somebody out of $1,000 or $5,000 or $100,000 or whatever. I might be congratulating myself, but next thing you know, damn, somebody that I trusted has robbed me. Now what? I mean, the threat that we face by embracing an immoral society and embracing these values of immorality, the problem we face isn't just from government. It's from the guy next door. It's from your spouse. It's from your kids. It's from your parents. Somewhere along the line, we've got to make that. We've got to regain the idea about you got to do right for the sake of righteousness. And you've got to appreciate it, and you can't just succumb and say, wait a second, forget doing right. I can make a fast buck. Got to get away from that mindset. Can't. You're headed toward a difficult end, and you're helping to bring everyone in the community, your family, your neighbors. You're helping to bring us all in that, push us in that direction.
Yeah, just take a look at New York. Frank Renton, yeah, look at Wiener and Spitzer. They're leading in their races for office. Hello?
I understand. Look at Italy. They had some woman who ran, she was a stripper who got herself elected, and maybe even a prostitute, who got herself elected to the Italian parliament. This goes back at least 10 years ago. But people laugh and they smirk and they wink and they think it's just a big joke. You know, we got some stripper in the parliament or whatever they have in Italy. but it is a sign of the times that points toward a day when Italy is going to have an economic collapse. There's going to be a price to be paid.
I always thought Spitzer was set up, but he didn't say no. He didn't say no to the prostitutes and how he was set up, but I do believe he was sort of set up and dragged through the mud because they all do it anyway. Not only do they do it to female prostitutes, they do it to all the males and so forth. So I think he was set up to some degree as he was, you know, being so hard on Wall Street, taking these criminals to court and so forth. So
well, that may be, but if you're in a racket where you can be set up,
but like
as
I said,
a prostitute,
he didn't say
why
no.
Do you come back to the racket?
Yep.
You know, there's a point in time if you are going to live in a whorehouse, you're going to have to live by the law of the brothel, which is screw or be screwed.
Unless he has another agenda. Maybe getting even. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe getting even or maybe getting rich or who knows what his agenda.
Highly unlikely getting even. I think getting rich is the number one.
All right, I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, pontificating on morality, and we will be back in a moment and get a little deeper into the news of the day. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Do you believe that there will be peace between Israel and the Palestinians?
You know, my position on that is it's in the end times, Bible warns, end times, there will be people hollering, peace, peace, but there will be no peace.
No.
I am inclined to believe, you know, I can be wrong. I don't know. Man knows the date and the time. I'm inclined to believe we are in or approaching end times. And those who are saying, oh, we're going to have peace with Israel. Are you crazy? Are you people absolutely out of your mind? I don't blame people for trying to create peace in the Middle East. All right, I get that. I understand that it's on its one level. It's a noble objective. But I'm just saying, how do you propose? I mean, this is like cats and dogs, all right? we're going to just throw 1,000 cats and 1,000 dogs in this little pen, and they're all going to be buddies. No, they're not. There's going to be, I mean, there's going to be fur and chunks of flesh flying all over the place. And the same thing is true in the Middle East. There's an article here from the Associated Press. Israel's premier fast-talking bill allowing for referendum on peace deal with Palestinians. That's the headline. And what they're saying, Israel's premier, Netanyahu, announced Monday that he is fast-tracking legislation that would allow him to put any peace deal with the Palestinians to a national referendum, an apparent attempt to silence hardliners in his party and coalition government. Now, this just strikes me as odd on the face of it. Why a national referendum? Huh? To allow the idiot Israelites, the people in the rank and file, the dummies out on the street to vote to support some peace program, some peace treaty? Is it to get Israel's political opposition off Netanyahu's back? Or is it to justify rejection of the U.S. proposed peace treaty in a way that excuses Netanyahu from taking the blame? In other words, if the Israeli people reject a proposed peace treaty in a referendum, who can blame Netanyahu? Who can blame the government? Here's why I wonder about the motive for this national referendum. There's a report at WorldNet Daily that the headline is Secret Obama Plan Forfeits Temple Mount to Palestinians. Temple Mount is the holiest site in Judaism. The Obama administration has quietly presented a plan which the Palestinian Authority and Jordan will receive sovereignty over the Temple Mount, while Israel will retain land below the Western Wall. This is according to a senior Palestinian Authority negotiator speaking to WorldNet Daily. And my reaction to that, and I get that, this is apparently Obama's brilliant idea, is he's going to try to persuade the Jews to accept surrender of the Temple Mount, the holiest relic in the holiest site in the Jewish faith. He's going to say, oh, we'll give that to the Palestinians and Jordan, and we'll keep the land below the west. We will keep the land below the Western Wall. Now, I'm just asking, are they nuts? Does anyone really believe that Israel is going to surrender the Temple Mount to Palestinians and to Jordan? I can't imagine any Israeli government that could negotiate such a treaty without being attacked by their own Jewish people. The very idea that the U.S. would even suggest Israel give up the Temple Mount strikes me as unbelievable. Are they crazy? This is like trying to negotiate a treaty with someone and say, in condition of the treaty, you agree to have both of your legs amputated. The guy's not going to take the treaty. You understand that? You got to be crazy to even think he'd take the treaty. So it strikes me as bizarre. Therefore, I suspect, assuming that the report from WorldNet Daily is true, I suspect that Israel may have been coerced by the United States into supporting a treaty, a peace treaty for Israel. But Netanyahu created an escape by leaving ratification of the proposed treaty to the Israeli people, knowing that certainly the Jews would never agree to a treaty that surrendered the Temple Mount. Bible warns that in end times, leaders will shout, peace, peace, but there will be no peace. The Middle East will be a conflagration, in my opinion, within what? Next 3 years? Can they hold it together for another 3 years, Melody? Or can we expect another Arab Spring maybe next in 2014? Maybe sooner.
I think the next 3 years is going to be real interesting, and even up including 2014. So, again, we go back to, it's amazing how they can continue to hold things together as well as they do, although people living in those areas probably don't see it as a way of keeping things together. So I'm sure they have a different view of things if you live there. And
you just have to look at this to some degree. How much trouble do they have in Egypt? All right, that place is falling apart. The rest of the Middle East, where even if they have money in some places, they also have radical Islamists who are just as eager to shoot other Islamists as they are Christians and Jews. I mean, the whole place is a powder keg. Anybody can see it. And yet, somehow they think they're going to they're going to disarm this powder keg with some sort of a peace treaty. If you could get somebody to agree to a peace treaty, how long would it last? How long before it burns, it just blows up in everyone's face? You just look at this and you say, I just don't see peace, but I don't think there's going to be any peace. What else have we got, Melody?
We have a regular caller, Jim from West Virginia.
Oh, I hope I'm not wearing out my welcome.
How you doing, Jim?
Oh, I'm doing real good. Thank you. I love Yessie's program.
Thank you.
Classic values. I raised with them. Don't hurt people. Don't take control of that which is not yours. Live up to promises. I learned to read with McGuffey's. It taught consequences of actions, good or bad. Every year through sixth grade, I was expected to read it, and it created a lot of my culture, believe it or not. I learned classic economics that said the only way to make a legitimate living is to produce something of value that somebody was willing to pay for.
Yep.
Point one, economics is not just about bucks. It is a science about what people want and need and how they go about getting it, moral or otherwise. Point two, it has been my observation that there is one thread which runs through everything which we refer to as sin, and that is the desire of something for nothing. You can see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And unless there is a moral reset, any financial reset in the world isn't going to do any good.
Well, there won't be a moral reset until this whole thing collapses around everyone's head. I can sit up here and you can sit up here and we can talk about morality and the need to reestablish some sort of a spiritual revival in this country. So we go talk about that and everybody's going to nod their head. But the first chance you get to, make a little extra money on the side that maybe you didn't really earn, it's going to be hard for people to resist that temptation. I don't think they're going to get the need. They're not going to understand the need for moral values until we go through something like the survivors of the former Soviet Union.
Yep.
After we see a great collapse and disintegration in the midst of the chaos, and it won't be fun for anyone, we will come to a consensus that, wait a second, we got to start to behave ourselves. Go ahead, Jim.
Alfred, I was going to say, I agree with you 100%. Before there was the Renaissance, the rebirth of learning, there was a Reformation, which was associated with the printing press and the Bible in their native languages. Before there was the American evolution, it was not a revolution. It was evolution out of endless revolutions. Revolution means here we go around again. Before the American evolution, there was a tremendous moral Christian revival. People say, oh, we can fix everything. Not until we see major corporate, meaning massive, repentance, including the churches, and the people of God get down on their knees and say, dear God, I have screwed up. And then He'll heal our land.
Yeah.
Until then,
it'll be a while
everything else
do
is
that.
Kind of fruitless.
Yeah, I agree with you. What do we see? What do you think is the source of the problem? Can you point to a particular source? Do you think it's a multitude of causes? Is there one primary cause? What do you think? What's your guess?
One primary cause.
Yep.
Okay, number one, we place God in first place. When you do anything other than that, you're going to be led astray. You can put golf in first place. You can put money in first place. You can put your appetites in first place. We naturally have our appetites in number one place unless or until we see through that. But taking God out of first place, doing the next right thing is another way of saying it. And
yep.
Unless that is in first place, something is like putting sand into a gearbox whenever you put anything other than doing the next right thing in first place. When money replaces morality, it's a bad behavior. That's where we're in trouble. And you could say anything else in there, sex, drugs, rock and roll, money, power, control, whatever you put in first place is where you're going.
Well, one of the things, I agree with you, God, number one, and if I were to go after number two, we've got a question of values. And the question and the values today are, we have Federal Reserve notes versus real money. I look at a fundamental cause. I won't say necessarily the fundamental cause of our problem, but fiat currency. The idea behind an orderly society is that we have an orderly system of values. But our money is in a constant state of flux. Our currency is in a constant state of flux. How do we decide whether to buy a house, a car, or invest in a manufacturing plant, or go down and buy ourselves a Happy Meal at McDonald's? The decision is based in part on the value that we attach to our currency. But the currency is in a constant state of flux. How can we have reliable values if the money doesn't have a reliable value?
Well, common to all good governments is protection of the borders and the establishment of good, of honest weights and measures. That includes weights and measures for gold and silver, which is what the definition of a dollar is, coinage act of 1792. But these are the things that our governments fail miserably at doing. And once again, unless we have the morality, our collective sin, like you said, that was number two. I think our collective sin as a nation is not standing up for our brother. When was the last time you heard a sermon on the Good Samaritan? But our collective sin is a sin of omission, of not standing up for our brother. Oh, our brother got hit with that code violation, or he got hit with, oh, well, they didn't get me.
Yeah, I understand. You're exactly right. You're exactly right, Jim. It's the idea that part of our obligation is to feel a sense of outrage, to feel a sense of shame. We've got to be, when someone is robbing someone else, even if it's your brother, your wife, your husband, your son, your daughter, you can't just sit back, smirk, and wink and say, well, that's okay. So yep. one of the people close to me, it was all right for them to rob somebody else. We have to be able to take a stand where it's not just, you know, I got to be willing to stand up and say, this is wrong. You must stop, even though you're a friend of mine. You must stop doing that which is wrong. And we don't. We just wink.
I am not my brother's keeper, but surely to God, I should be his protector. I should be his warner. I should be a watchman on the wall. I should stand up for him. And you can go to the smallest patrol, the smallest tribe in the smallest part of the world out there, and there's somebody who's a night watchman watching out for everybody, and God help him if he steals from people. That's what government basically is. I watch my back if you watch yours, and we have watched our brothers and neighbors get stabbed in the back for decades, and we have not spoken out.
Yep.
Thank you for your program.
All right, Jim. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Well, Melody, we got about 2 minutes left. Anything you'd like to add?
No, but the listeners can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. For all their gold and silver coin needs, we got some great specials going on. And if they'd like to have the book from Michael Snyder from yesterday, Any Gold Purchase, we'll earn you the book at no extra cost. So they can give us a call on that. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And if you have any emails, questions for the program, direct them. We'll address them at the 4 o'clock live program, which we are doing right now. Questions@dgscoins.com.
Okay, Melody, now you still have another minute and 10 seconds to go. What about that, huh? I've got something here. This was ultimately from Bill Holter, who writes for another newsletter. He says, we're facing a major default in the gold and silver markets on COMEX, which has a whopping 29 tons of registered gold inventory available for delivery. But August COMEX deliveries of gold should be at least 30 tons, which would take care of all existing registered gold for delivery inventory. And then what? What happens after August? And the point he's making is that COMEX is about out of physical gold. And it is his prediction. He's raising the question, it appears, that they've got 29 tons left, and there's probably 30 tons that have to be provided in August. And what happens after COMEX runs out of physical gold? What happens to the price? And the price almost certainly has to begin to rise dramatically. I'm Alfred Addisk. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be